Georgia. At 5 in the morning, someone banging on the door and shouting. Her husband, John, leaping out of bed, grabbing his rifle. And Roscoe, at the same time, roused from the back house, his bare feet pounding. Maddie hurriedly pulled on her robe, her mind prepared for the alarm of war, but the heart stricken that it would finally have come. And down the stairs she flew to see through the open door, in the lamplight, at the steps of the portico, the two horses, steam rising from their flanks, their heads lifting, their eyes wild. The driver, a young darky with rounded shoulders, showing stolid patience, even in this. And the woman standing in her carriage, no one but her Aunt Letitia Pettibone of McDonough, her elderly face drawn in anguish, her hair a straggled mess. This woman of such fine grooming, this dowager who practically ruled the season in Atlanta, standing up in the equipage like some hag of doom, which indeed she would prove to be. The carriage was piled with luggage and tied bundles, and as she stood, some silver fell to the ground, knives and forks and a silver candelabra, catching in the clatter the few gleams of light from the torch that Roscoe held. Maddie, still tying her robe, ran down the steps thinking stupidly, as she later reflected, only of the embarrassment to this woman, whom, to tell the truth, she had respected more than loved. And picking up and pressing back upon her the heavy silver, as if this was not something Roscoe should be doing, nor her husband, John Jameson, neither. Letitia would not come down from her carriage. There was no time, she said. She was a badly frightened woman with no concern for her horses, as John saw, and quickly ordered buckets to be brought around, as the woman cried, "Get out! Get out! Take what you can and leave!" and seemed to be roused to anger, as they only stood listening, with some of the field hands appearing now around the side of the house with the first light, as if drawn into existence by it. "And I know him," she cried. "He has dined in my home. He has lived among us. He burns where he has ridden to lunch. He fires the city in those clubs he once gave toasts. Oh, yes, someone of the educated class, or so we thought, though I never was impressed. No, I was never impressed. He was too spidery, too weak in his conversation, and badly composed in his dress, careless of his appearance. But for all that, I thought quite civilized, in having so little gift to dissemble or pretend what he did not feel. And what a bitter gall is in my throat for what I believed was a domesticated man with a clear love for wife and children, who is no more than a savage with not a drop of mercy in his cold heart." It was difficult to get the information from her. She ranted so. John did not try to. He began giving orders and ran back to the house. It was she, Maddie, who listened. Her aunt's hysteria, formulated oddly in terms of the drawing room, moved her to her own urgent attention. She had for the moment even forgotten her boys upstairs. "They are coming, Maddie. They are marching. It is an army of wild dogs led by this apostate, this hideous wretch, this devil who will drink your tea and bow before he takes everything from you." And now, her message delivered, her aunt slumped back in her seat and gave her order to be off. Where Letitia Pettibone was going, Maddie could not get the answer, nor how much time there was, in fact, before the scourge arrived at her own door. Not that she doubted the woman. She looked into the sky, slowly lightening to its gray beginnings of the day. She heard nothing but the cock crowing, and as she turned, suddenly angry, the whisperings of the slaves gathered now at the corner of the house. And then with the team away, the carriage rolling down the gravel path, Maddie turned, lifting the hem of her robe, and mounted the steps only to see that horrible child, Pearl, insolent as ever, standing, arms folded, against the pillar as if the plantation was her own.